Thanks to Audible.com for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. Everyone, please go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire to show your support and get a free 30-day trial to Audible. Thanks, Audible.
Welcome to our gathering tonight. Here we share stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things. Sit back, relax, and warm yourself by Jim Harold's Campfire.
Welcome to the Campfire. I am Jim Harold, and so glad to be with you once again. In busy times here at the Spooky Studio, we continue to put out content both on the free side with this show and the Paranormal Podcast, and of course my plus content over at jimharold.net. Check that out sometime if you get a chance. But right now, the business at hand, we have some fantastic campfire stories, and we're not going to delay. We're going to get right to them. Here's the campfire. Jane is joining us from Connecticut. Now, I've got to say, I'm not going to spoil this story, but these types of stories are some of my absolute favorites that we hear on the campfire. Jane, welcome to the program. I know you've been listening for 3 or 4 years, so thank you for your support, and please share your story.
Well, when I met my husband, he was a widower and the father of 3 children, who were 4, 8, and 12 at the time. And his late wife, who had died sadly quite young, had been Japanese and a Buddhist. And he kept some of her ashes in his home in a black lacquer shrine. And I'll describe the shrine in a minute. The children went to the shrine for birthdays. They lit incense and so on and so forth. It wasn't really a religious thing, but it was more to honor her memory and to keep her in the family.
Sounds like a great idea.
It was great. And so we met and we married, and eventually we decided to move to another state for job reasons. And we wanted to bring the children's mother with us as best we could. So I had owned myself a black lacquer Chinese cabinet, which we put in the corner of our dining room of the new home, and we put the black lacquer shrine with her ashes in it, with the doors always open. It had closed doors, but we opened them, with their mother's ashes and a big picture of her in traditional Japanese garb above the shrine. And just to describe the shrine, it's about 18 inches tall, maybe 8 inches wide and 6 inches deep. The outside is a shiny black lacquer, and inside it's painted, just painted gold, with a small gold Buddha, maybe 8 inches tall, and her ashes are in a white silk container next to the Buddha. And it sat in our dining room, and during special events, people would go in and light incense. Sometimes the children just went in and talked to her. And it was very important to us, since they were half Japanese, and neither my husband nor I are, that part of their lives, we live in a neighborhood, but we're actually, our house is set into the woods, so that we're surrounded by many, many trees.
Mm-hmm.
And so this event happened in the middle of the night one night. My husband and I and all of us were sleeping, and the heard a big thud, a really loud noise. And my husband got up to investigate, and we couldn't find anything, so we got back to bed. And when we woke up in the morning, the dining room window looks out on the driveway of the house. As I said, it's surrounded by many very big trees, hundreds and hundreds of big trees. And my stepson looked out of the window and said, "Oh, my gosh." And we went outside, and we had our 2 cars in tandem in the driveway, one behind the other, with about a foot between them, at most a foot. A huge tree had fallen in the driveway, and the reason he was going, "Oh my," was because the tree had fallen in such a way, this huge tree, that it literally was placed between the 2 cars.
Oh my.
Didn't touch either of the 2 cars. It didn't do any damage at all. If you had tried to place it that way, there would be no way a human being could do that. and the top of the tree had just brushed against the garage. You could see the slight brush marks. Had that tree been any closer to the house, it would have hit my youngest stepson's window, and it could have been fatal. It would have been terrible. But the way the tree felt in the most perfect way, all it did was produce firewood, and it did no damage to either of the cars or to my youngest stepson. So as we're marveling about the miracle of this tree falling in such an amazing way, my middle stepchild, my stepdaughter, looked, turned around, and in the corner, in the little black lacquer shrine, the inside, which was just a flat gold, was suddenly lit up. There's no electricity in it, but
it looked, oh my,
as if it was filled with light, absolutely filled with light. The shrine was glowing. The Buddha was glowing. Everything in it was just glowing as if it had been electrified. And we were just all looking at it. Our mouths are open. And we were saying, what's going on? And my husband, who's an engineer, said, well, you know, maybe it's the sunlight, but it's never done that before. And he's
right,
looking out there to see scientifically if this is happening. But he said it didn't really make sense. And for several minutes, I don't know how long, it was glowing, and we all felt as if their mother had protected us all.
Wow.
And someone said, Mom's looking out for us as it's glowing. And to this day, that has never happened before since we've been in the house for almost 20 years, going on 20 years. And that shrine is still there. I'm looking at it now as I speak to you. It's just a flat, dull gold. And it has never lit up like that before or since.
That's,
and, oh, by the way,
yes,
only the shrine was light. I mean, nothing around it was. We have other things on that area. Nothing was lit up. It was coming from the inside of the shrine.
Oh, my. So I got to tell you, that's a great story. That's a great story. And I love that because I think people think that the paranormal and the supernatural always has to be spooky-ooky and scary. And I think there are aspects of it that could be quite reassuring and, in this case, a life-saving.
It was a miracle, and we all saw it, and we all knew it. And nothing, you know, we're all different religions. My husband's Catholic, and I'm Jewish, and she was Buddhist. But I feel like a miracle happened that day, and we were all protected.
That's fantastic. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Campfire.
Thank you.
We're going all the way to Australia for our next Campfire caller. He's been listening for a year or two, and we're so glad to have him online, Jamie. And he says, this is not a ghost story per se, but more of a miracle. I can't wait to hear it. Jamie, thank you for joining us, and tell us what happened.
Yeah, thanks, Jim. I don't know how you'd categorize this. It's it happened about... It was about 15 years ago now. I was in England, in London, on a holiday, like a working holiday, and not having the best of times. Things hadn't quite worked out as I'd hoped. Like the job was a bit not what I expected. I hadn't been paid or anything yet. But anyway, I was at a train station. And I literally had no money on me. Well, I had just enough money to pay for the train to get back to my where I was living. So I went through all my bags and pockets and everything just to get enough for this train ticket. And then so I had a bit of time to kill. I needed to go to the toilet. And just as I was turning to go towards the toilet, in my mind I realized it actually costs, I think, 25 pence to use the toilet.
Oh, yeah. They used to have those years and years ago, I think before my time here in the States, but they still have those over there, huh?
Yeah, I guess it was a while ago. It's a while ago now. It's probably more or anyway. But... As that happened, I kind of felt like I just passed out very temporarily, and I sort of came to again, and there was a 25 pence coin in my hand.
Huh.
And I've tried to sort of rationalize every way this could have happened. But it came out of nowhere. There was no one near me. And so basically I just feel like I had at that time a guardian angel looking over me or something.
Well, the thing is, let me ask you this, because in your email, you basically you were kind of down in the dumps. You weren't having a good time. I don't know that you were clinically depressed, but you were depressed in general, it sounded like, from your email. Do you think that this was more than just about the 25 pence, that it was more kind of saying, cheer up, everything's going to be okay?
Yeah, that's what I have thought as well. It was a one-off. It's nothing like that's happened to me before or since. And, I remember getting on the train afterwards, and I was walking up and down the train telling everyone the story, and probably lucky that I didn't get, you know. But I thought, yeah, like I was, when it happened, there was no one near me unless I can't explain it any other way that it just appeared in my hand.
That is and so cool.
I know it's such a small and insignificant thing, but I just can't explain it. And it definitely happened. I know it.
Yeah, I'll tell you, these things happen. And that's the thing that, you know, I think most people equate our program with ghost stories, but I love these kind of tales of the weird, and they don't have to be scary. Sometimes they can be reassuring and uplifting. And yeah, it's kind of like, well, 25 pence to go to the restroom, but hey, at the time, that's a pretty important thing. And plus, it sounds like to me, maybe it did have that greater message. Well, thank you so much. I know we had to go back and forth on the time, and you were very kind. We got the time wrong, but you were very, very kind, and were able to do it. And if Jamie can get a hold of us all the way from Australia, you should come over and share your story at jimherald.com/campfire. Jamie, thank you so much for listening. We certainly appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks to Audible.com for supporting Jim Harold's Campfire. Audible.com is a leading provider of audiobooks with more than 180,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. And I'll tell you, I think we're in a golden age of audio, and a huge part of that are audiobooks. They're great to listen to get premium, excellent content when you're driving, stuck in traffic, maybe you're commuting on the subway or bus, doing chores around the house, working out at the gym, doing errand shopping, cutting the grass, shoveling the snow, whatever it might be. And the good news is you can try this out risk-free. For our audience members, Audible is offering a free 30-day trial. Just go to audiblepodcast.com/campfire and browse the over 180,000 audio programs. Download a title free and start listening. It's just that easy. And you all know I'm a big fan of Stephen King, so one audiobook you may want to consider is Joyland. Now, I'm right in the middle of that. It's set in a North Carolina amusement park in 1973. And it talks about a young college student who comes to work as a carny. And then, well, the horror ensues. You may want to check this out. It's a couple of years old, but on Audible, it's unabridged. It's 7 hours and 33 minutes. And need I say more, the master himself, Stephen King, and the masters of audiobook at Audible. And again, to get your free 30-day trial, audiblepodcast.com/campfire. I haven't even mentioned their fantastic app for your mobile device. It is tremendous. And the nice thing about Audible is you're not renting your books. You own them. I just love that about it. Now, we're so excited that the people of Audible have been such supporters of the shows. Our very first sponsor. And for years and years, they have supported us. So everyone, please go over to audiblepodcast.com/campfire. That's audiblepodcast.com/campfire. And go for that 30-day free trial, because that will show them that you're listening and you support them for supporting us, as they have done for many years. I thank them so much. I enjoy their service. I was just listening to an Audible book last night. May just do it again tonight. I know you'll love it. AudiblePodcast.com/campfire for that free 30-day trial. AudiblePodcast.com/campfire. Thanks, Audible.
If you love classic TV, check out Jim's new free podcast, TV You Grew Up With. Jim interviews legendary stars and authors about the greatest TV programs ever made. Guests have included Don Wells from Gilligan's Island, Linda Gray from Dallas, Don Most from Happy Days, Judy Norton from The Waltons, and many more. Listen at TVYouGrewUpWith.com, iTunes, or wherever fine podcasts are heard. Tune in today. Now we return to the show.
Oh, I love to talk to brand new listeners, and TJ is one. She is in Atlanta, Georgia. Just been listening for, I guess, about a month or so. And she has a story that happened to her, and it revolves around a dream. TJ, welcome to the podcast as both a listener and a contributor. And please tell us what happened.
Hey, it's very, very nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you.
Okay. So basically, this revolves around a dream I had. This is about 11 years ago or so. And the dream had to do with my mother. I was living with my boyfriend at the time at his home, and I had a really bad dream. It was one of those dreams where you think it's real. So the dream was that my mother had passed away. I didn't have any details around her death. I just knew that she had died, and I was crying. And I remember in the dream, I was comforting my daughter. She was 6 or 7 at the time, and I was sitting in her room on her bed, and we were hugging each other and we were crying. And the difference about this dream was that there was a lot of details that I remembered. Everything seemed really real. I could remember her bed. I could remember her, what the room looked like, what her dresser was, but it wasn't what her room looked like in real life. It was like I knew it was supposed to be a room, but it didn't look like how it looked. So I'm crying and sobbing, and I remember looking out of the window, and it was a picture window from ceiling to floor, and the view was a privacy fence, and there was like a parking lot and like a little well or something down the street. And so basically, I just remember feeling like despair, like the worst despair I've ever felt. So I wake up and I'm crying out loud, woke myself up with crying. My boyfriend was like, you know, are you okay? What's wrong? And so I went to tell him what the dream was, and my cell phone rings. And I grab it and I look at it, and it says dad's cell.
Oh my.
So, yeah. So immediately my stomach drops, and I'm thinking, oh my God, this is it. This is it. I can't believe this is really happening. So I go to grab the cell phone and I press, you know, I press the accept button, and nothing happens. And my screen goes frozen. I can't hear anything. I can't turn it off. I'm calling out, hello, hello, dad. No one does anything. So I wind up taking out the back. There's a flip phone. So this is 2004. So there was no, you know, touch screen phones like that. I had to take out the back and took the battery out. And then I put it back in and I, you know, restart it. And I call my dad's cell phone again, and it goes straight to voicemail. So after a couple of attempts, I finally get through, and my mom answers on the first ring. And the first thing she says is, are you okay? And also I wanted to bring up the fact that I live in Atlanta and they live in Denver, and this is about 7:30 in the morning. So it's about 5:30 their time.
Right.
And they would never call me that early. So this is not normal for them to call me that early. So, you know, I'm like, mom, you know, oh my gosh, yeah, I'm fine. You know, are you okay? And she says, yes, I'm calling because I had the strangest dream. I had a dream that you died. And I could not tell her my story fast enough. And I had to ask her, I said, well, why did you call me from dad's cell phone? And she said that when she attempted to call me from her cell phone, her screen froze, her her phone froze and she couldn't get it to work.
Ooh.
So the same thing that happened to me happened to her, apparently. So we go over each other's stories. Hers was that she didn't know how I passed away, but she knew that I drowned.
So she had a dream that you passed away, and you had a dream that she passed away. Wow.
Exactly. It's crazy. So after we talk about it, we're joking. Now that we're feel better, we're like, okay, we're both not dead, you know. And so she made jokes about don't drown, you know, close your mouth in the shower, things, funny things like that. So that was it. It scared me because I really thought it was real. So let's fast forward about a year later. I moved out of my boyfriend's house and me and my daughter moved across town. And one day I was in her room and I realized that when I look out her window, it's the same exact view of what I saw in my dream. Her bed's the same way, the same dresser, the same bed. I had never been to that area before. The same privacy fence, the same parking lot. There's like a little well across the way, and you can see it only from her, from the second to townhouse. So it's two stories, and her room's up on the top floor. And you can only see it from her room, that view. Mm-hmm. And I remember I was putting up blinds, and it hit me all at once that, oh my gosh, this is the same exact view. I got that stomach drop feeling of, oh my gosh, why did it take me so long to see this or put this together? And so needless to say, my mother is not passed away. The entire time I lived in that townhouse, I was worried that it was going to happen while I lived there because of the clarity and of how everything, you know, felt together, came together. So I was really worried that something was going to happen to her while I lived there.
Right.
Nothing did. However, my father did pass away while I lived there. And he drowned, actually.
Ironically
enough, 2013, he passed away. He drowned, and he's an excellent swimmer. We still don't know exactly what happened.
I'm sorry.
There's witnesses, you know, they don't know if he had a stroke or we don't know what really happened. We just know that he did drown. And we lived in that location. And it's just so strange because I've never had a dream like that since then. And the fact that her and I pretty much paralleled each other.
So
with the same feeling.
Yeah. So do you feel that maybe it was kind of like a premonition, but the signal was kind of scrambled and it was kind of transferred onto you and her respectively. In other words, maybe you were getting some warning about your father, but it was scrambled in some way and inaccurate.
I think, yes. After he passed away, like a year later, it started coming together. Like maybe that's what that was, because I still see like the dream is still so clear. And usually I don't dream that clearly where I can remember all those details. And anything is possible to be honest with you at this point. There's things I've experienced that you just don't know. I don't rule anything out.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Wow. You've given us something to think about. TJ, thank you for joining us all the way from Georgia. Really appreciate it. Thank you for listening to the programs. I'm glad that you enjoy them.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Next up on the program is Laura from Burbank, California. Maybe beautiful downtown Burbank. I don't know if you remember laughing, but she's going to tell us a little bit about her first apartment that her and her husband moved into and some strange goings on. Laura, welcome to the program. Thanks for joining us and tell us what happened.
Hi, thanks for having me. My husband and I, when we first moved in together, we moved into this tiny little apartment, probably just a few blocks away from all the studios. And I think right off the bat, I noticed something was off. I mean, of course, I didn't notice while we were looking at the place, so I might have given it a second thought. But when we first moved in and I started taking showers, I realized this place is a little creepy. The rest of the place was fine. The bathroom just had this energy that was kind of oppressive. Like, I'm one of those people that likes long showers. I relax in there, head under the water.
Sure.
But as soon as we moved in, I could not close my eyes in that shower because I always felt like I was being watched.
Oh, my.
Yeah, it was so weird. And I just would, I turned into one of those people that was the fastest shower person ever and would get out of there just because it was so uncomfortable. Even for just a quick eye closing to rinse, I would just immediately like, something's in here. And it's funny, my husband never noticed anything. He was completely oblivious. But it kind of progressed, and my husband's one of those people that likes to talk in his sleep.
Mm-hmm.
So I started recording him talking so he could hear how silly he sounded. He'd say stuff like, lemon sauce. And in one of those times that I was recording, you could hear my husband snoring away, and I had the recorder right next to him. And I was on the other side of the bed. You could hear me flipping through my book. And it's farther, you could definitely hear me farther away. And right next to the recorder, all of a sudden I heard, turn out the light. Just whispered right
ooh.
In the recorder. I still get chills to this day thinking about it. It was just so creepy. And I wish I still had the recording. We lost it over the years. But yeah, it was really creepy. I also got recordings of people arguing. Just like a couple, and you couldn't understand what they were saying, but it was obviously in the room. And my husband even asked, who was over here and who was arguing? And I said, Mario, that was in the middle of the night. Like, who would be arguing in our room?
Well, you know, the thing that's interesting to me is that, and again, I put this in the same category when people just happen to see a ghost as opposed to when they're investigating. Again, nothing against our ghost hunting friends. We have a lot of ghost hunting friends, all the respect in the world to them. But some of my favorite stories are when people capture things or they find something, not when they're looking for it, but when it just happens to show up when you're not looking, and especially on tape.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely, because I was actually listening to things he said, and then I would catch these other little, that whisper, and little argument, and I was thinking, it just stopped me in my tracks. Like, what is this? And then I started thinking, okay, maybe I should listen more, but I stopped because I was like, if I have to live here, I don't think I want to know too much about what's going on.
Right.
But it was definitely one of those places where I realized that I slept with the TV on and earplugs because my husband snored and talked. But I realized that kind of the TV on top of that kind of covered up other noises that
sure.
I didn't want to hear in the middle of the night. And I kind of denied it for a long time. And then one of my neighbors in the next apartment said, she goes, you know what? The cat watched somebody walk. And she goes, we were laying in bed. And she goes, she watched somebody walk across the room past me into the bathroom. And I went, you have it too. I said, you have a spirit there. I'm like, it's so unnerving. She goes, well, thanks a lot. She goes, I live alone, but at least you have somebody. I'm like, yeah, but he doesn't hear a thing. I even had a Native American friend come over, and she was using the bathroom, and she screamed, and I said, what? And she said, what is going on with your bathroom? She goes, it's so creepy in there. And I went, yes, it is. So it was weird. And then it got to the point where if you sat on the couch, you could look straight up, the television was straight across from the couch, and then right next to the television was the bedroom door.
Mm-hmm.
And if you watch TV on one end of the couch, you, out of the corner of your eye, you can see shadows walking from the bedroom to the bathroom.
Ooh.
And it got so unnerving because it wasn't just one or two. It was constant.
Well, that's
and I was
right.
Looking for.
Well, I would have been out of there very quickly.
I think that's when I started sitting on the other end of the couch. And my husband said, why are you sitting so far away? And I said, because I don't want to see shadows, and we're so far away from the street that it couldn't be like car shadows. Like, we tried figuring that out because we were like, there was another building really close to us, but there was a fence in between. Like, just trying to figure out, like, how possibly can a shadow walk that direction? And it just wasn't possible. So it was like, oh, I don't want to know what's really happening here.
Well, thank you so much for sharing your story. And you've moved on from that apartment, correct?
Yeah, we moved on to another apartment like 5 or 10 minutes away. And all I could think was, this is the quietest apartment ever. I mean, and then I thought, well, I had no idea how much was happening there until you're in another apartment that nothing's happening and it's so quiet. And I thought, well, maybe there was a lot more going on than I was allowing myself to believe.
Sure sounds like it. Thank you so much for joining us today on The Campfire.
you very much.
Next up on the campfire is Jackie from New Jersey. Now, she's been listening for a few years. And several years ago, she had this period of time when strange things were happening. She's going to tell us about that strangeness. Jackie, welcome to the program. Thank you for listening for years. We appreciate it. And tell us what happened.
Okay, well, around 2007, I started having these unusual experiences. And I lived in this house, in a townhouse, and I lived there for years, and there were no weird experiences. So I didn't really think the place was haunted or anything.
Mm-hmm.
But there were a number of occasions where I would wake up in the middle of the night feeling like there was some kind of presence in my room that was trying to wake me up.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't happen like every night. It was maybe like, you know, maybe a handful of times over the course of a few months. It was from maybe like July to October.
Okay.
And so I kept blowing it off thinking it was my imagination. But there was one time I woke up in the middle of the night and I distinctly felt like somebody poked me in the back
mm-hmm.
with a finger. That's what it felt like. And I was alone. And so that was really strange. And I just was like, oh, well, maybe it's my imagination. So this, you know, kept continuing for a few months. And there was one night where I had this really weird dream. And it wasn't like an ordinary dream.
Right.
It was like a dream where in my dream, I'm lying in my bed and I'm not seeing anything. I'm not feeling anything. I'm not hearing anything. But I sense what can only be described as like this intelligent energy, like near my head, like at the side of my bed. And for some reason, I have no idea why, but I thought that it was my ex-boyfriend that I hadn't spoken to in like 5 years. And so I'm communicating like in my mind, and I said, oh, is this, you know, my ex-boyfriend? And there was this emphatic, yes. I was like, okay, you know, calm down. And so then I said, oh, well, so if you're in spirit form now, can I pray to you sometimes? And there was this less than enthusiastic kind of response of, okay, I guess so. So anyway, I wake up the next morning, I was like, that's the weirdest dream I ever had. So again, I blew it off. And then finally, ironically enough, the last experience that I had was on Halloween night, okay? And again, I wake up in the middle of the night feeling like somebody was there, like a presence was there trying to wake me up.
Right.
And it woke me up out of a dream. And the only thing that I remembered about this dream was that there was this song playing, Lonely Old Night by John Mellencamp.
Okay.
And it just gave me the impression that whoever it was that was trying to wake me up was lonely. So anyway, I'm awake at this point. I'm fully awake. And so I decide that I'm going to try to communicate if there's any presence in the room. So in my mind, I said, okay, if there's a presence in this room, just, you know, do something to, you know, make me aware of your presence or if you want to communicate with me. So I'm sitting there for about 5 minutes, nothing. I thought, okay, this is crazy. I'm just imagining things. So I roll over, and just as I drifted off to sleep, my cell phone rings. Okay, it's like 3 o'clock in the morning. And I'm thinking, okay, there is no way that I'm answering that cell phone because I don't know who or what is on the other end. It really freaked me out. But at the time, my sister's husband was having health problems. And I thought, well, what if it's my sister calling me because it's an emergency? She has to drive her husband to the hospital. She needs me to come over to ask a bunch of kids. So I thought, okay, I'm going to look at the caller ID, and if I don't, you know, recognize the phone number, I'm not answering it.
Right.
So by the time I got up out of bed and got my cell phone out of my purse, it had stopped ringing. And the number, it didn't have a number on the caller ID. It just said restricted. I was so freaked out that I had to sit with the light on for the rest of the night.
Oh, my.
And that was the last incident that I had. I've never been able to figure out the explanation for it. I researched my ex-boyfriend. He's still alive. And I even considered the possibility that it was like maybe something evil that was trying to trick me, but I didn't get a negative vibe from it. Like, it didn't seem like anything like angelic or anything demonic. It just felt like it was like somebody who was like lost and lonely, like trying to get attention or something.
Do you think it was attached to that physical place?
No, because I lived there for years. and there was no weird experiences. And then after this, no weird experiences.
Huh.
And that was the weirdest part about it. I'm sure that I'll never get an explanation for that.
Yeah. And it just kind of hints at how strange our existence is and how many times, you know, we don't really know what's going on. You know, it's kind of like through a veil seen darkly. But we thank you for sharing your vision with us and what happened to you. Thank you so much, Jackie, for listening for all these years and being a part of the campfire.
Okay, thanks.
Don't forget about Jim's other free program, The Paranormal Podcast. Well, since 2005, Jim has been interviewing luminaries from the paranormal world. Guests have included Amy Bruni, George Norrie, and hundreds more. Listen at jimherrold.com, iTunes, or wherever fine podcasts are heard. Now, we return to the show.
Emilio has been with us a few months, and he is from Texas, the great state of Texas, I should say. And he has one of these stories where, you know, those urban legends that are out there, and you think, that's just somebody telling a tale. Well, Emilio did his own little investigation and found out that the urban legend was true. Emilio, welcome to the program and tell us what happened.
All right. So I lived in Austin, Texas for probably about 6 years or so. And it was probably right at, you know, beginning of high school, about midway through high school. And started hearing these stories about a haunted bridge out in a little suburb of Austin. And it was called Jake's Bridge, and the legend was that there was a cotton farmer, Jake, who had his family and everything out there. And during the Great Depression, you know, he, you know, couldn't sustain his family or anything, so he took his family out to this bridge, shot his family, and then hung himself off the bridge. And the legend says you go out there and you park your car on the bridge and you put it in neutral and turn the engine off, that the family will come and push you off the bridge to save you from Jake. Well, you know, we were skeptical at first, but, you know, thinking maybe the bridge was slanted or, you know, something was going on with it where, you know, naturally the car would roll. We went out there to test it, and we've been out there several times, but, one time we went out there to test it out. We had we were with my brother and his wife, and there was me and then one of my old childhood friends. And we'd gone out there, and we had the idea of, you know, putting baby powder and stuff on the trunk of the car just to see, you know, if anything did push us, it would leave prints or something on there. And we went out there, parked the car, and we sat there in the car, complete darkness, for maybe 5-10 minutes. And then we felt something hit the back of the car, and then we started rolling. So instantly, you know, we're just freaking out, like, you know, we don't know what's going on. We're moving. We've been sitting there for, you know, almost 10 minutes and not moving at all. So, you know, we're all a little bit rattled. I'm sticking my phone out the window of the car, taking pictures, trying to see if there's anything back there or what's going on. And we finally roll to a stop at the end of the bridge. And we pull a little bit further up under a streetlight and decide to get out and look at the powder and stuff. And clear as day, right on the gas cap of the car, there's a skeletal-like handprint. And the
Ooh.
Baby powder.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. My friend was the first one who saw it, and he freaked out running down the road with a few choice words. But, you know, we snapped pictures of it, you know, documented everything, and we also had what looked like child fingerprints all on the back bumper of the car, and looked like someone had leaned up over the trunk, too. We had a big smear mark on the trunk. So it was kind of shocking to actually see, you know, something like that. And we tried replicating it, like, you know, putting powder on our hands,
right,
and putting our hands in there, but it never looked the same. Like, our hands would leave would pick the powder up off the trunk, so it would be like, you know, the powder would be gone from where our handprints were. And even we put powder on our hands and put it on the trunk, you know, it looked fleshy. This handprint had almost no flesh to it. You could see the separation in the joints and everything. It was really creepy.
Oh my gosh. Wow. And the thing is to actually, to me, the thing that would really freak me out the most would be seeing that skeletal outline of that hand.
Yeah, that was the kicker for us. I mean, that was like just big wow moment. Like, you know, we thought, you know, of course, like the bridge was slanted or something, but
sure.
That right there was pretty good evidence that, you know, something was back there.
It certainly sounds like it. Well, Emilio, now any temptation to go back there? I mean, do you want to? Well, you said you tried to recreate it.
Yeah, well, we've tried doing our own experiments, you know, at home and stuff, trying to recreate it. And we've been out there several times since then. And we've moved across the bridge, but never gotten the handprints or anything like that before. Well, never again.
It's a great story. Well, Emilio,
any opportunity I take, I would definitely go back out there and try it again now.
Well, thanks for listening, and thanks for coming on the show and sharing this most unique story of that spooky skeletal hand and that strange trip across that bridge.
Yeah, no problem.
Next up on the campfire is Tim. He's actually from Akron, Ohio, in my neck of the woods. Always good to talk to a fellow Northeastern Ohioan. I mean, I get to talk to people all over, and many times, very rarely, do I get to talk to somebody right in my own backyard, but so great to do it. Akron, Ohio, of course, the home of LeBron James, the best basketball player on the planet, although I think maybe some people out in San Francisco might have something to say about that. Anyway, Tim is here. And we've talked about a lot of different haunted things on this program, but never a haunted pool hall. But we're going to rectify that tonight with Tim. Welcome to the program, my friend, and please tell us what happened.
Thanks, Jim. Thanks for taking my call. Yeah, it's definitely always nice to talk to Northeast Ohio, and we'll say we're Cavs fans instead of Browns fans.
That's right. That's it. There you go.
So the haunted pool hall, it was a new building that was built in the late 90s in my hometown. And I started hanging out there with my friends, you know, not long before it opened. And it really wasn't long before I started hearing stories from some of the people that worked there saying that the place was haunted, and they'd have different experiences, like blinds going up and down by themselves, or hearing weird screams coming from the back of the building. They said it sounded like a kid screaming or some kind of animal noise, but there wasn't anything there. So, you know, didn't think much of it at the time. And the more I hung out there, the more I befriended the people that worked there. And in time, the owners, I mean, ended up actually working there. Well, the first thing that happened to me personally was that I was just starting the job, and I was in there before they opened with just a friend of mine that was, well, he was working there, he was opening the place up, so I was in there. And one of the reasons I think this new building might have been haunted at the time is because they decorated the place for a lot of old knickknacks and antiques and stuff they'd find, even like big stuff like there's a big old phone booth in there, and traffic lights and all sorts of stuff like that, railroad signs. And so I'm wondering if maybe something was attached to some of the stuff they brought in. I don't know how to explain how the place could have been haunted, but anyways, I was standing there playing pool by myself, and my friend was the only other person in the building, and he was in another room. And all of a sudden, behind the bar, there was a utility phone on the wall in like a metal case. It was an old, I don't know how old it was, like an antique. It's like a metal case with this old phone inside that doesn't even have a rotary or a dial pad or anything. It's just a line on a hook. Well, anyways, all of a sudden, the metal case flew open and slammed against the wall really hard.
Oh, my.
And it didn't scare me, because I thought, well, you know, it must be on a spring. And my friend said, you know, he looked like he saw a ghost. So I go over and I look at it, and I realize this thing is so old that the door doesn't even swing. You have to physically push it open. And to slam it open, you have to, for it to make a slamming sound on the wall, you have to physically slam this thing into the wall.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there wasn't anyone even there. So here I am, you know, my first day, I'm already having something weird happening. And A lot of different people had a lot of the same experiences over the years, which is something that always kind of added some, I guess, truth to the stories. And
right.
People would have the same thing, and multiple people over the years talk about this scream coming from the back of the room, multiple people saying, you know, they'd see this white light flash across the room. And, you know, first I tried to debunk things and say, oh, the flashing lights, you know, there's headlights from cars going by, but you know what that looks like. And then you'd see this thing and say, that wasn't a headlight. Or you'd say, well, it's that banging sound. Well, it's the ice machine, or it's the heater, or this or that. But then you'd hear stuff and you'd say, yeah, there's no explanation for that. I tried to debunk as much as I could. The owner, one time she walked into the bathroom, the women's room when we were closing, she saw someone standing there on her left, and it startled her, obviously, because we were closing and there was nobody else in the building besides me and her. And she looked over real quick and they were gone. And one night her and another employee were behind the bar, and I came back from my break and I saw them both standing there staring at a Gatorade bottle on the floor. And I asked what they were doing, and they said that they were standing there talking, and they were like up against the bar, and there was a Gatorade bottle on the bar, and they said all of a sudden it just jumped off the counter and landed on the floor in front of them. And they were just standing there staring at this thing. Probably the scariest things that happened to me personally was it actually started, I had to stay there for a little while. I was sleeping there at night because I didn't have anywhere else to go for a couple months. So it was kind of a choice between either sleeping on the sidewalk or sleeping in a haunted building. It was a tough choice. I decided to sleep on the floor of the office for a little while there. And I'd have you always get that like, uneasy feeling, and it was just a very uncomfortable building to be in, especially after hours. If you're by yourself in the middle of the night, it was very, very unsettling. I don't know how else to describe it, but I used to just shut myself into the office in the back, and I wouldn't even go out and play pool or pinball or anything else that I had free access to as an employee. I would just kind of barricade myself in the office because I was so freaked out. Well, one night I had a friend in there with me after hours, so it was probably 2 or 3 in the morning. And I went to go walk into the kitchen, and I took about a step into the kitchen. I was getting ready to flip the switch of the light on, and
right.
I stopped in my tracks because I could hear a little girl crying. And the kitchen, there was nobody in the kitchen. It was totally empty. And if there was a physical 10-year-old girl or so standing in all this room, bawling her eyes out, that's how loud it was. It was
right.
Echoing off the walls. But the room's completely empty. So that was terrifying. And another one was I was in the office by myself at night. Like I said, I'd locked myself in there. And all of a sudden, I had a remote control for the TV on my lap. And all of a sudden, I heard a noise at the floor, like the sound of the remote hitting the floor. And I thought, oh, the remote fell off my lap. Well, I looked down, and the remote's still on my lap. And I look on the floor, and there's another remote on the floor, and I realize that the remote on the floor is the remote that had been up by the TV on top of the desk. And it had somehow just, like, flown off of the desk onto the floor.
Oh, my goodness.
And I wasn't moving or anything. I was just sitting in the chair. And as I was sitting there trying to process that or come up with I'd always try to come up with a logical explanation just for my own sanity so I wouldn't be so freaked out, you know, but stuff like that you can't really explain away. But as I was sitting there, I started hearing footsteps in the attic. And keep in mind, this is probably 3 in the morning or by myself in this building. And the footsteps now, I mute the TV because I hear what it sounds like, footsteps. And it sounds like they're coming from the back of the building, you know, off in the distance from where I am. And it sounds like heavy footsteps coming towards me. And at first I'm thinking, well, you know, it's an animal. No, it's not an animal. It was, you know, very obviously human footsteps, you know, boom, boom, boom. And they're coming towards me. They're getting louder. So I'm sitting there listening to this. And when the footsteps got above the door to the office that I had closed, the door frame actually like creaked from the pressure of footsteps above. And when that happened, I about fell out of my chair and I backed up against the wall, the far wall, and the footsteps were above me in the office and they stopped right above where I was sitting, where the door is, where you put one of those acts you go into by pulling the rope down and the ladder comes down. The footsteps stopped right there. And I know for a fact there's no one up there. There's no way in or out of that attic except for that door. And I've been sitting under it all night since we closed. So I knew that even though I'm hearing these footsteps, there's no one up there. And to run out of the office, I had to, run directly under the door. So I just sat there on the floor petrified, thinking that, just waiting for something to come popping out, or thinking that if I ran under it, something was going to like grab me or something. I don't know. So I just sat there around for how long, hours, just petrified, too afraid to move.
Right.
So those two were the scary things that happened to me. But like I said, a lot of people had the multiple people saw the window blinds going up and like physically going up and down by themselves on one specific window, and hearing this crazy scream from the back of the room. And what was weird about that was the first employee there described it. He said, "Oh, I heard this noise. It sounded like an animal screaming or a baby drowning or something." He did not describe it. He said it was just this horrible noise. And then a few years later, I had another girl describe the exact same thing to me. She said, "Oh, I heard this terrible noise from," and she described the same corner of the building, and she had the same difficulty describing what it sounded like. She just, some kind of animal, like that same thing. And luckily, I never heard that one myself because I didn't want to, but a few people heard that. Another one was the owners were always kind of skeptical of the whole thing.
Right.
And so I mentioned the one owner had seen the person in the bathroom. That's when she started thinking that maybe I wasn't just nuts and just weren't nuts when you tell these stories. The other owner, he never admitted to anything happening to him, at least for a while, until one day he was in there in the wintertime cleaning during the day before they opened, and it just snowed out, and he kept hearing this noise that he described as sounding like someone throwing snowballs against the back of the building, and there was a bike trail nearby, so there'd be kids always on it, so he thought there was kids out there throwing snowballs. So finally he got fed up hearing this noise over and over, and he went out the emergency exit to go back there to tell him. Well, he goes back there and there's no one there, and then he looks down and realizes that there's a fresh snow on the ground and there's not a single footprint anywhere. So that was another unexplained one. He was really banging. I think I'm looking at my bullet points here. I think that was about all the craziest one, but this went on for years until they finally closed. And I definitely was excited to get out of there when I did, because it was every night, even if there wasn't anything specific happening, it was always very uncomfortable, at least for me. And I guess I've always kind of been a little bit more sensitive to these things.
Right.
So for me, I'd be there at night, and then just the hair would just be standing up on your arms and your neck, and you just have that feeling like you're being watched, and it was very uncomfortable. Another weird one, which is just random. A couple different times, I'd be behind the bar in the afternoon before we'd open, so I'd be going in there, and all of a sudden I would get this overwhelmingly strong smell of coffee, like fresh coffee, like almost just like the beans. But we didn't even have any coffee in the building. We didn't have a coffee maker. And I was like, "Oh, that's weird." And I happened to mention that one time to the owner when we were sharing stories, whatever. And she said, "I did the same thing happen to me a few times." It was kind of like faint smells. I don't know if that's paranormal for sure, but I couldn't come up with any explanation for it. But yeah, that's pretty much it.
Well, I'll tell you, that's something else. And I love the different places that we get, because people think about the obvious places, graveyards and old houses and hospitals. But a pool hall, that's certainly something different. Well, thank you so much for calling us from Akron, just down the road. And go Cavs.
Definitely.
Thanks so much for joining us on The Campfire. I hope that you enjoyed it as much as we did. A lot of fun. I hope you'll contribute your campfire story. Just go over to jimherold.com/campfire. That's jimherold.com/campfire. Thanks so much for taking time to listen, and we'll catch you next time. And as always, stay spooky. Bye-bye, everybody.
You've been listening to Jim Harold's Campfire. Tune in again next time for more stories of ordinary people who have experienced extraordinary things.